Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Peaceful Growth, a show about learning tools, tips, strategies to grow your business, life, and career without burning out. I'm your host, Anil Gupta, CEO and co-founder of Multidots, Multicolab, and DotStore. Now let's get into today's episode. Hello everyone, welcome to today's episode of Peaceful Growth. My today's guest is Devin Walker. Devin and I have a really long history, you know, so he has been, and his company GiveWP has been one of our clients in the past. So we had a great privilege to work with him and contribute into the GiveWP product. At this moment, Devin is general manager at Stellar WP. He's also, as I said, founder of GiveWP, one of the famous donation plugin. And Devin, it's a great privilege to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Anil. It's great to have you or doing this podcast, and I love the whole ethos behind it. So really happy to be here.
Yeah, no, it's a great treat. And as I said in the introduction, that I have a great privilege to work with you, and multiple different occasions we also met. But I have observed that. As a person, like, you know, as a founder and as an entrepreneur, you are intelligent, smart, but as a person, you are very humble and grounding. And I have to say this, but my team, let's say, when we were working together, you were actually a favorite client for them. So they would highly, like, sometimes some of the other team members were not working in your project, they would reach out to my business partner and tell them, like, hey, is there any way I can work on a GiveWP? And Devin, so there's something about you where you're very always, you know, spend that time and energy to connect with the people that you work with.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And it was really great working with your team as well. You know, I still have some favorites on the team, or not favorites, but there's some standouts, let's say, that are really just nice people, some funny characters, and I would always look forward to chatting with them on Slack. But one thing that you just said there really stood out to me, and it was me being humble. And I think that's something I've always kind of prided myself and try to be, or to have that as part of my persona over the years. I know a lot of entrepreneurs and Hollywood videos and Silicon Valley, you portray entrepreneurs as being these more eccentric and very, you know, cash hungry and not so good to look up to people. And I don't think that's really the case at all from the people that I've tried to surround myself with. You know, you try to be more subtle about the ways you go about different successes with business, and keep it to yourself, and don't roll up in a Lamborghini when you don't need to. It's just not my style, and I don't think that's it. You know, treat yourself when you need it, but I don't think you have to be all lavish and things like that. So thanks for mentioning that. That stood out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you mentioned, that's also a theme of this podcast, Peaceful Growth Podcast, you know, and has also been a theme of my life, where that growth, you know, when it comes to growing yourself, growing your business, yes, we work hard, we make some hard decisions, we try to create a bigger impact, but doing so, you know, doesn't has to be like stressful, or doesn't has to be that, you know, where you need to be a jerk. You know, like, you can still be humble, grounded, balanced, and grow. So that's kind of like, you know, what I'm trying to apply that philosophy in my life and my business, that how we can grow and also stay peaceful, humble, joyful, and so kind of like, you know, doing both that together, not how to pick one or the other. So yeah, that's something, and that's something I also like doing in this podcast, to kind of like talk about that aspect of that, that how we can grow in our life and work and business, and also continue to excel into other part of our life, like health, mental health, physical health, relationship, just in general, being a great human being.
Absolutely. And it's a lot easier said than done, right?
Yeah.
You have to really try for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll fall down sometimes. And if, as long as you can pick yourself up and have a support group around you that will help you out in that, makes it a lot easier. I know, looking back in the last 10 years of my career, there's been quite a bit of struggle in there to attain that peace, and there's some really difficult times where I was on the ground and didn't stand up throughout that. And and I've reflected a lot on that and seen sort of the patterns that can get you into those not so good states of mind, and really it can trap you sometimes. And if you don't get the help you need, or you don't have the group around you, then it'll just affect you personally, it'll affect those around you and your loved ones, and then ultimately will affect your business as well.
Do you want to share maybe one or two things that was really effective for you to get out of that zone?
Yeah, so I think the biggest one for me was definitely, one, being healthier and getting back to working out and exercise and doing a competitive sport. And another was, of course, cutting out other substances in my life. So I would be noticing I would drink alcohol too much, or I'd turn to alcohol. Mm-hmm. A stressful day of work, it's really easy to go in the refrigerator and grab a beer, and then before you know it, you fast forward an hour or two, and then you've had, four or five beers. And eventually that pattern can start repeating itself really easily for certain people. I know for myself, it was alarmingly easy at times. And so stopping that pattern is not as easy as just a snap of the fingers, especially if you're being depended on by an entire team of people, right? So you need to be able to either have a really strong willpower and practice that, or be able to go seek some help for it. Not like necessarily going to, AA or something, but of course there's nothing against that. But being able to just seek out help from a loved one or somebody that's respected. Luckily, I had some great mentors and some great close people in my life that just said, hey, you could do it. And it's been a whole lot easier for me to have a whole better mindset without that. And using that as a tool and recognizing that is not adding value to your life is really important. So getting away from that, doing other things like yoga has helped me as well. Working out in the competitive sports also are great.
One thing I have observed on my own experience and some of the other entrepreneurs that I've been chatting around, just in general about the burnout and stress and how we all cope up with that. I think one big realization for me was that not knowing those patterns that you mentioned, that like in those moments when I feel stressful, where I feel that despair, like I feel lost, there are like certain things that I would always clinch to, so whether it's watching Netflix in the plane. I grew up in a state in India, which is a dry state, and you have been there in Gujarat, right? So alcohol was not easily available, So
you have to go to the hotels or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but instead, there are so many different things. So, for example, watching like Netflix or or social media, scrolling through social media.
Oh, yeah.
And I have seen that all of that was just a temporary relief, but that was not something that was kind of like building a strong foundation that I needed in order to get out of that rut hole. You know, so that's where first thing for me was that realization and aware finding that, okay, I'm doing that, you know, it's not helping me. And the second thing, what you mentioned about that, I feel very blessed that I'm living in an age where help and solutions are very easily and radically available. You know, it's not something that I have to walk or drive like 1,000 miles in order to find a solution. It's just right there, you know. So that's something like, and what you mentioned about yoga and meditations and some of those things was very helpful for me. And most importantly, just kind of like replacing, you know. So I think for me, it was not, I know that like when I'm stressful or when the situation, when in a tough situation, is going to be that I cannot avoid it.
Right.
But how I recover from that, my recovery was something that I replaced it. So I was like, with Netflix, I want to replace with the audiobooks. I'll go walk outside, listen to a good audiobook and get lost into the world of books and knowledge, something. That's but like great. Something I know that I'm going to be stressful, you know, and that's not avoidable. But what I, how I react in that situation is something that I can plan in advance. So right. Kind of like doing some of those stuff, like, and same thing as like when I feel like, okay, I'm just doom scrolling the social media, right? Just doing that or refreshing my tabs on mails. And I can see that like, okay, those are the triggers. I can see that there's something going on here. Either I'm not inspired, either I'm not focused, either I'm tired. There's something going on here if I'm doing that. And immediately I'll try to switch to do something which will just change that pattern, help me get out of that pattern.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hardest part, though, is realizing that, because all those things that you mentioned are very addictive. Doom scrolling, especially when our work involves social media, it's part of what we do. I mean, we have to be present in the community. We have to be working on finding out what's happening in the latest technology and software. And the underlying theme, I think, all of it is we have such fast-paced society, and our minds are going equally as fast. And having the ability to slow down your mind, and I found yoga really does that for me, focusing on that. When I'm playing volleyball, I'm focused on nothing more than scoring the next point and how I can win the match.
Right.
And then also with audiobooks and actually physically reading a book, I find that really helped me. But being able to slow down your mind is so hard. And it takes practice. You can't just like hop off from months and months of doom scrolling or whatever. You're just working 10 hours a day and expect to slow down. You have to ease into it. And it's not just like flipping a light switch. And so once you get into that state, it's really easy to get out of it, right? And go back to your old ways. So the key is staying into that nice balanced state where you are, you know, of course, using social media, you are being a leader of your team. You are making sure that day to day, what you need to do to succeed in business is taken care of. But at the same time, you're taking care of yourself and your family as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And one hack that I did actually that, I mean, of course, like, you know, we have heard this advice, like removing all the apps from your phone, like all the social media apps from your phone, because then you'll naturally go there. So I did that, but it was still not helpful, you know, because the YouTube was something I noticed that every time, like when I get stressful, I go to the YouTube. I don't have any other apps but YouTube, you know. And in the YouTube, I noticed that I would just like watch these random funny videos and stuff like that. So one day I did is, I cleared all my history, my YouTube search history and YouTube like watch history. I cleared it out, and intentionally, I subscribed to and clicked on the videos related to yoga, meditation, spirituality, some book summaries, like one day when I was like really high energetic, not in my lows, when I was in my high, I did that exercise, clean all my YouTube histories and intentionally clicked on all the good stuff, you know. So now whenever I open the YouTube automatically recommends me like some meditation and this yoga video and this like spirituality video. That was kind of like something that I was like, huh, I should have done this, you know, because what YouTube suggests to you is you have a little bit of control based on your search history, based on what you watch, you know, it will suggest you. So yeah, it's like just purge all of the stuff that you think is not serving a purpose and sign up for more like good stuff.
That's the number one social media I use, if you can count it as one, because I'm on YouTube all the time and I try to avoid the YouTube shorts because those are literally designed to be addictive, right? And I never go on TikTok, but some of my friends do, and I know they just spend hours on TikTok.
Yeah, great. All right, Devin, let's switch gears to a little bit about we know about your success with GiveWP and everything that you and your team has built, an awesome product. We also still recommend a lot of our clients whenever they're looking for a donation solution.
Thank you.
The question that I have for you is, tell us a little bit about before GiveWP. So what's your story? What were you doing before you founded and created GiveWP? And then we'll talk a little bit more about GiveWP's story and success.
Sure. So I graduated from the University of Arizona in 2007. And my senior year, I had an internship over the summer in an IT department of a large organization that did government contract work. It was called Anacomp. And just as the name implies, Anacomp, it's very corporate-y sounding, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty large multi-thousand person company. And after I graduated, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but they offered me a full-time job. And so I said, this sounds great. You know, it's pretty decent salary. I had made no money really before that, before the internship. So salary, I was like, oh my gosh, wow. It's going into the big world here. But essentially, I went into that and I worked there for 2 years. And it was just like you imagine from the movie Office Space. There was cubicles and fluorescent lights everywhere. You could walk in, there'd be 150 people in this office, but you could hear a pin drop. And all you could hear is keyboard typing and some people on the phones. But it was not the experience that I imagined my work life would be. So I knew I had to get out of there. But before we get into that, the one great thing that came out of that is they tasked me with setting up a corporate intranet. And by doing that, I started working with some Microsoft technologies and learning ASP.NET and also getting interested in the more programming side of how this stuff works, because in IT you can either be kind of a network engineer and you can mess around with servers and stuff like that, or you can be more of a developer and on the software side. And so I really noticed I do enjoy this, and eventually from there I started getting curious and I found Drupal and I found Mambo, which was the precursor to Joomla. Mm-hmm. And eventually also found Joomla, and then that led me into open source PHP, learning about all that. And not too soon or not too long after I discovered that, I saw WordPress, or I first installed WordPress. And I was like blown away after working with Drupal, Joomla, and Mambo. Mm-hmm. And I obviously checked out PHP Nuke or something like that. I didn't really mess around with that too much.
I heard about that too, yeah.
Yeah, but once I think it was .NET Nuke actually. But once I installed WordPress, it was like honestly a curtain being lifted up into this is what I want to do, because I started building sites. The themes were so easy to work with. PHP was easy for me to understand. I mean, of course, I didn't get into the crazy complex stuff of it, but I knew I wanted to then do something creative with this. And I live not too far from San Diego. So I moved, I basically didn't have a job or anything. I quit Anacomp, said, here's my 2 weeks, I'll see you later. I moved downtown and I just started interviewing at different agencies. And thankfully within a week and a half, you know, I put my personal website together, put a really nice resume, a creative resume. Started doing a lot more design work. So it wasn't easy or it wasn't hard to stand out. But it, essentially, I got hired within a week and a half at an agency, a really small boutique agency in downtown with a great, cool office. And they were doing a lot of restaurant and hospitality work, all entirely on WordPress. And from there, I just became a theme machine and essentially built so many themes for so many different restaurants and hotels. And it was so much fun because some of them were nightclubs. We'd get VIP access. We'd get free dinners. We'd get hotel stays. And I did that for 2.5 years. And then they started charging me with building plugins. They're like, hey, you know, we need this custom booking integration with our hotel reservation system, or we need this Yelp feed to pull in and show our reviews on Yelp, and we also need to book reservations on OpenTable. And so all these complex projects came over to me, and man, talk about learning on the job. It was so much fun. But essentially, about 2.5-3 years after that, I realized I'm pretty good at building these plugins, and I noticed a lot of use cases that haven't been built before, such as reviews or restaurant reservations. And I'm thinking people were going to buy this. You know, I could. Mm. I released a couple free plugins right on WordPress.org. I got some traction on that, some 5-star reviews. I was like, this is really fun. And at the same time, a couple of other agencies were reaching out to me to do just some work for them as a freelancer. So I took another risk. I resigned from the agency for my full-time work and started doing just freelance work or micro-agency work. Mm-hmm. And building software on the side for WordPress. I spent a lot of time building a restaurant theme that I wanted to sell in Theme Forest. And back in the day, their review system was so cutthroat that they would always find something wrong with it. I wanted to compete with Avada and some of these other themes on there, like the X theme. I don't remember. Does anybody remember that theme X? I don't know what happened to it, if it's still around or not. But I really wanted to crush it on Envato, and I never really got anything on there. And I was like, you know, if they're going to be this nitpicky and keep rejecting my theme, I've been spending literally, I don't know, 200 person hours on it. I'm just going to do some stuff on my own. So eventually did that. And then finally bumped into Jason and Matt Cromwell going to WordPress meetups. So I was going to a lot of WordPress meetups all sort of downtown. And just meeting some really cool people that had the same passion I had. And going to WordCamps, I was really learned a lot going to WordCamps and meetups and met so many cool people. Going back to Jason and Matt, we came together and we said, hey, we all have this passion. Jason, you can sell ice to an Eskimo. I can really develop and figure out good products and work with customers. And Matt, you're just a great customer experience person. You can run support. You can run customer success. You can run account services. And you can take care of all that. And it was just like the perfect trifecta coming together. Yeah. And so that was around 2013 that we all grouped up together. And we were basically doing agency work to pump up the product work. And we didn't know what kind of products we wanted to build. We were just releasing all these premium plugins and free plugins. So freemium, it had a free version. Right. And on the agency side, we were doing a whole heck of a lot of nonprofit sites. And I was jamming Gravity Forms down their throats to accept donations and, you know, did a pretty good job, still does a pretty good job, but it doesn't have a lot of the back-end features like donor management, donor-specific reporting and donation fundraising-specific reporting, all the stuff that we built into prop up or as a foundation for fundraising. And they really wanted that. So then we gave them WooCommerce and we built all these add-ons for that and eventually sold a lot of those and made some pretty decent money on that. But it was at WordCamp San Francisco 2014, the last one before WordCamp US was created in 2015, that Matt and I flew up and we sat through lots of great presentations. We met with a lot of great people and sort of had a, we went out to dinner after on the Sunday after WordCamp and we're sitting down just having some food and there's sort of epiphany came over us and we're like, no, we really should develop a whole e-commerce based fundraising solution and put some real significant investment in it and take a big risk here. And Matt just like stared back at me and I knew he was on the same page. He's like, yes, we should do that. and we should make sure you're freed up for the next 6 months at least. I'll completely take over all your work and do everything to make sure that you can focus on this. And I'm going to chime in too and help build the MVP. And Jason's going to make sure the clients are all happy. And basically that's what we did. We grinded for the next early 2015 and we at WordCamp San Diego 2015, we sponsored it, we organized it and we revealed here's GiveWP and everybody loved it. But the first question was, does it do recurring donations or recurring subscriptions? We're like, oh, then we went back and really, really worked hard on that. So that's kind of the story of Give and how we got into it from start to finish. And since then, we get into that too. But that was my earlier career getting into GiveWP.
No, thanks for sharing that story, Devin, because I had the pieces of this story, but I haven't heard the full story so far. And I just love that how, you know, the whole journey is evolving, right? So it's evolution, like learning, doing plugin, then doing some agency work, and then also being a part, going to WordCamp 2014.
Yeah.
So interestingly, that was actually the first WordCamp that Aslam and I, Aslam is a business partner, those who are listening doesn't know. So Aslam and I, we actually first time we traveled to US. That was our first international trip, and we wanted to meet some of our clients in Bay Area, and we learned about that, there's WordCamp happening there. So we kind of like planned our trip around it, and that was our first WordCamp ever that we both attended together, and also, you know, had a chance to meet Krish Lama and Matt Muhlenberg and like a lot of celebrities at the, before that, you know, it's kind of like we were considering them as like the novelties to meet at someday. But yeah, it's very, very, I'm sure we might have crossed our path, you know, but at that time probably, yeah, we didn't know each other, but yeah, we were there at the WordCamp too.
Yeah, that was a great one, and I remember all the barbecue and the on the lawn in the back. And
do you remember the fire grill?
And then also, I was like, "How are these people getting picked up all left and right?" And they're like, "Oh, you haven't heard of Uber? Uber's a great thing. It's like I'm just in the Bay Area now." I was like, "Wait, so I can get a cab with my phone?"
Great.
Okay, guys, so if you're interested to check out how Multicollab works and how Multicollab can solve your problems or improve your content publishing workflow, you can go to our website and click on the Try Demo tab in the menu section. Then simply fill out your details and there you go. Now you have access to the demo environment where you can test all the amazing features that Multicollab has to offer.
All right, so Devin, let's talk about, you know, that you... And your team, you know, you did really work hard in order to grow GiveWP business. So you sold that business to LiquidWeb or StellarWP?
LiquidWeb, yes.
LiquidWeb, right? So tell us a little bit about why did you decide to sell it? And also at the time of selling GiveWP, how big GiveWP business was?
Sure. So basically, After we started GiveWP and released it in 2015, the first couple of years were a grind. And I wouldn't say it rocketed up like a hockey stick growth, but through 16, 17, and early 18, we really were developing a lot, pushing out a lot of new add-ons, a lot of new code, improving the core of it, marketing the heck out of it. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars each year on online advertising, but also event-based advertising at WordCamps, just waiting for that profit to come out. And
what works the most, like after all the, because that's another question that I get a lot from the listeners, and they share us this question. Like, there are so many different advice about promoting or growing a product, WordPress product business, like social media, WordCamp sponsoring, you know, the content and SEO, affiliate. Like, what do you think works the most for you and GiveWP?
I mean, early on, I would say we really put a lot of effort getting it out to the community and those influencers and the developers and agency owners. And one of the great ways we did that was through WordCamps and sponsorships and organizing them and speaking at them as well. How do you measure that as far as the ROI? I mean, I've never found a great way to do it. If anybody knows a great way to measure ROI from WordCamps, let me know. But other side of the coin is some folks like Syed or Pippin were just totally disregard that, and they've had lots of success too. But I believe that a lot of our success came from WordCamps, and we spent a lot of great sponsorship money doing that and helping out the community in the same time. Online advertisement, we found that has been pretty successful as in maybe 2017 moving on. I mean, you can clearly measure that.
Okay.
And your ROAS is, if it's above 1.0, you're not doing too bad. Yeah. So that's that worked out for us as well. But also content writing, going on, you know, organic marketing, like getting on podcasts, creating your own content. That all worked. We just basically, every one of us were marketers. It wasn't just like, here's the marketing department and we're going to run these campaigns. It's like, no, you come to work, you develop, but you also market the heck out of it as much as you can. Whether you're on Twitter or you're on X or Facebook, we're going to stylize a banner for you. We're going to put you in the Facebook groups. We're going to be everywhere. And that's what I think is one of the more potent or powerful marketing methods.
No, thanks for sharing that. And another question I have related to that, which is when it comes to starting a WordPress product business, what I have noticed that a lot of those founders have some sort of like tech and engineering background, you know, so they are like developer or have some sort of coding. So they're really excited about building the plugin or the product, but when it comes to promoting, you know, that's where like they struggle, especially struggle in the sense where like they assume that once I build the plugin, get it out, then I'm getting businesses, start making money, you know, in the first month, second month, and they continue to wait 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, and still they don't have a break even. So the question I have is that what advice do you have in regards to, actually I have a couple of questions there. The first is, what is the kind of like timeline and investment, dollar investment amount? That's kind of like what you were aiming for, like, okay, we will invest this much in this business, and if we don't get profitable or we don't achieve the break even, then I think we're gonna call it quit. The second question I have within that is what is that moment, you know, where for GiveWP, where you like how long it took for GiveWP and how much investment to get to the break even?
Yeah, so I think it would depend on your risk appetite, either as you as a solopreneur or if you have partners, you have to figure this out together, right? For instance, my risk appetite back in 2016 was enormous because I was just a single individual versus my partner, Matt, who at the time had three kids and a wife. And so his risk appetite was much less than mine. My other partner, Jason, was just like me, right? So we kind of balanced that off, right? Like, hey, Matt, you know, we're going to guarantee your salary. We're going to make sure everything that we do can guarantee that. And at the same time, we're going to work hard to ensure that this product will grow. And one of the best things that happened, well, first off, before we get into that, I think that our risk appetite was, let's say, 3 to 4 years, right? We weren't going to go just slog through the mud for more than 3 to 4 years. If it's not working after that, we're going to sell it or sunset it. That's kind of, but if it does work and we get some wins along the way, our horizon's probably 7 to 8 years before we're comfortable with exiting. We're not going to do this for the rest of our lives. We're three individuals with various interests. But the time has to be right and the buyer has to be right. So we all kind of agreed upon this when we got started. Moving forward into how it went along the way. One, going back to releasing recurring donations, that was like the one feature that 95% of the people needed to have. And it wasn't included in the free product, thank God, because that made the big difference for us. So once we released that, we had a big pop in sales on one day, and it kind of continued on after that. And that was just the perfect win that we needed to give us a lot more motivation to keep going for years to come. So
how long it took to get to that point since you started in terms of time?
So it took us 6 more months after we released. Okay. So we released and we got just, you know, a trickle of sales here or there. And every time that we got lots of refunds because I knew they couldn't run recurring giving, which is so important with nonprofits. And so we were back to the heads down coding that solution for that. And it's a complex solution to solve. So it took us 6 months to get that out the door. But once we did, it really helped out and motivated us further. Does that answer both of your questions?
It did answer one question, but the second question is that, and this is something that I'm kind of like trying to share this information later on with the whole WordPress community, which is about what is that average investment that goes into growing any successful WordPress product business? Because that's kind of like, you know, the one big thing that is like we see the plugin install, we see the revenue, we see all that, but there is no enough data in regards to, so I asked a lot of these questions to different podcasts, let's say for Multicollab. So far we have invested somewhere around $200,000 into that business. We still haven't achieved the break even, but that's fine. When I asked these questions to other founders, the answers were somewhere between $200 to all the way to $500,000 before they got the break even, you know. So that's kind of like where I also wanted to ask you if do you remember what does that number look like for you?
Well, I would say it depends on what kind of plugin you're trying to build now. It also depended back then, you know, if it's a niche plugin, maybe less, but also whether you count your own time as a cost, which would make sense to do. So let's say if we counted my time and Matt's and Jason's during that 6 months to ramp up, plus the next 6 months after that to build recurring donations, plus all our other add-ons, all the marketing dollars that went into it over the years, and then all the money we flowed back in to, of course, take care of the people we needed to, I'd say it's at least $500,000, if not more. Probably between 6 to 8 is the range I would put it in order to break even. Because we sponsored a lot of WordCamps, we flew a lot of places, and it took us to late 2017 to break even.
Okay, great. No, thanks for saying that, Devin. And we also kind of went a little sidetrack to the main question. But yeah, these are some of the questions that a lot of entrepreneurs have. So yeah, let's go back to, why did you decide to sell it, and what were some of the lessons that you would like to share with the other founders who are planning to sell their business?
Yeah. Yeah, so lots of lessons learned along the way throughout that. But one, I mean, let's talk about 2017 moving onward. So we hit break even, right? And mm-hmm. from there, we just continued to throw fuel in the fire. We defocused. One big lesson along the way was during 16 and 17, we were building other plugins to try to scrape along some profit, right? Mm-hmm. So I spent time building a Google Map plugin where you can, you know, it was a pretty cool plugin. And then all these other different plugins that were making, you know, a couple thousand bucks a month, maybe $10,000, $15,000 a month. And it was great, but it was taking away focus. And so one of our mentors, our mentor, said, why the heck are you doing this stuff? You're neglecting the golden goose over here. Mm. So it was kind of an epiphany moment. We decided just sell it or sunset it. And we sold some of it, and we sunsetted some of it. And from there, we just focused entirely on GiveWP for the next 4 years. And from there, our growth really started to grow. We started to polish the product, polish the brand, the website, the marketing, all started to tell this whole consolidated story together. We were known as the Give guys. We had some really great team members that we hired from WordCamps that came in, just really embodied the spirit of our brand. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. And the world got turned upside down, and we weren't sure what the heck was going on. We shut down our office in San Diego, and then we waited a couple weeks. And then what started to happen was that our sales started to just spike like crazy, because a lot of churches had shut down, a lot of shelters have shut down. So they needed to continue fundraising. They might not have had a website before, so we crushed it in 2020. And our sales basically almost doubled. And in 2021, it just continued on. Not nearly as much, but quite a bit. And I was looking at the market, and I was looking at the stock market. I was looking at all these SaaS valuations and all these different acquisitions happening. I was like, this just feels like the time to do it. Like we're in a bubble right now, and the best time to sell is in a bubble on the upside. And I know we're in it. We're never going to get a valuation this high. Like the Fed is giving away money to people. They can't even, everybody's got their coffers full. So if we're going to get out of this, it's going to be now, and this is going to be the right time. And so thankfully we were approached by some really great brands, really great companies. We evaluated them all.
So did you reach out or started like looking for companies to buy?
They started reaching out to us. Like multiple PE firms reached out, and then multiple hosting companies reached out, many that we've heard here.
And they all reached out within that time frame, or they were already kind of like connecting
for like, you know, we sat down with GoFundMe, we sat down with some really big players, but they didn't really understand what open source and WordPress was. They just knew we were making a mark and seeing our name. But no, I didn't reach out to anybody. I never sent an email once about, hey, do you want to buy my business? No, everybody reached out to me.
Okay.
And
that's really good position to be in, right?
When you start. That's kind of the way you want it, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
You see, you're kind of giving your hand up already if you're reaching out to them.
Yeah.
But you know, we were doing coaching with Chris Lemma for about a year, I think, before COVID hit, and then COVID hit, and essentially we continued some coaching, but then we dropped off, and then 2021 rolls around. I think it was a late 2021, or no, it was early 21. And it's, excuse me. And then an email goes into my inbox. It's like, he was at Liquid Web at the time. Hey, you know, we're interested in GiveWP. Let's chat. And out of all the emails and all the people, Chris has mentored us quite a bit through the years, and I've gone to many combo presses. I knew he wouldn't reach out if it wasn't a good fit for us and them. But of course, the number one was, is it good for our team? Number two, is it good for us as partners? And then what the heck's going to be the end valuation? And thankfully, it wasn't wasn't just a quick process. There's tons and tons of meetings and work along the way. This is a big deal being done. You know, we had all our lawyers involved, and it really came down to like the 11th hour. You know, things can really fall out on that last day. You know, cold feet are a real thing. Thankfully, nobody got cold feet at all. And we're extremely happy with the deal now sitting in this chair more than almost 3 years later.
Yeah.
And as far as the valuation goes, we got, let's see, I'm not going to give exact figures, but it was, let's say, low eight figures. Eight figures.
That's great. And what about the multiples? Because that's something that I have also observed, that there are like multiples of like revenue or EBITDA. Like, how did that play out for you? Is that something that was within the range of your expectations, or you had to negotiate a lot?
We negotiated the heck out of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the multiple was, let's say, what was it? It was around, let's say, in the range of 4 to 6 times revenue, which if you do EBITDA, that would be, what would that be? Around 8 to 11 or 9 to 11 EBITDA.
That's pretty solid.
You can't get that now. Good luck getting that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's pretty solid. Yeah. Wow. Good for you. Yeah.
But looking back, so going on to lessons, looking back and now being on the other side, like Liquid Web, aka Stellar, now that's our umbrella brand that, you know, and seeing how deals are done. And I've evaluated many brands now being on this side, which is one of the great things I wanted. I wanted to move past GiveWP, learn more about running larger brands. We run LearnDash, the events calendar. These are some really big brands, and I get to see behind the doors. I get to work with the executives on that, or the leaders on that. But the big lesson that I've learned is use a banker. We didn't use a banker. They will take like 10 to 15%, maybe upwards of that, of the final deal. But they're going to be cutthroat with the negotiations. And you know, we were, through our lawyer, decent, and our mentor, but we were on the front lines of that deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, we had a good friend and Chris Lemma there, and could we have gotten more out of it? Potentially. Could the deal have fallen out? Maybe more likely. We could be sitting here today maybe regretting that, and and trying to sell like some businesses are for a lower valuation. So I figured a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush back then. But I would recommend in times like that probably to use a banker. I've seen these bankers come by our desk, and they're ruthless, some of them.
Yeah. So what does the bankers do? One thing you say, they negotiate, and they also front face with on behalf of you, right? So like, yeah, what are the different besides
negotiation? Well, they also aren't afraid to set time limits also. Like, hey, if you're interested in this deal, we got six other parties, and you better get your LOI in by Friday or your best first offer, and otherwise you're out of the whole bidding process altogether. Right? And they put these different, they sort of game the system in a way towards their advantage or towards their client's advantage.
Okay.
And they've been through it. This is what they do all the time. And so rather than having a novice out there, you want an expert. And that's what I've seen. And they give you these white papers and rundowns with all they paint a really fancy picture of your business as well. Which we did, you know, we did some really fancy slide decks and things like that based on the past ones that we've seen come through our, just through our friends and stuff, but it was presented by us, and it wasn't exactly the best presentation we could have created. And they also have a network, right? So they've sold to different businesses. Well, they might know GoDaddy, they might know Bluehost or whoever. So they can just shop it around their network.
Yeah, and because they have done this like hundreds of times, right? So they already know a lot of those things that if you're doing that first time, probably will be new for you, and you would not know, you know, some of those tactics and the different mechanics of doing a deal.
Right, but you don't know if you're going to get a better valuation in the end by using them unless you've done it multiple times, because perhaps you could have done that on your own, perhaps not, depending on who you are and what your network is. Some it's just not realistic. Mm. But there goes that commission for them, right? But it's just part of doing business.
Yeah. So what stage do you think we should involve a banker? Like when you are ready to sell, or when you already have an offer, or
Before that entirely. So you have met with your partners and you have made a conscious decision together that now is the right time and we want to exit together, because if you're not all on all the same page, it's going to be a real disaster down the road.
True.
But if everybody's like, yeah, now's the right time, then you should go seek out the proper representation for you and do interviews with multiple.
Yeah. Great. Any other values or lessons, Len, Devin, on that?
I mean, for us, it was really big. We love our team. And almost 3 years later, sitting back, our team, our head of marketing, our head of support, our director of development, they've all been elevated within the larger organization. Mm-hmm. And so they've gotten better benefits. They've gotten higher salaries. They've gotten more responsibility. They've become better leaders. And as well, Stellar/LiquidWeb treats people right. They don't come in and just gut businesses, right? So I've seen lots of businesses sell, some hosts to other hosts, some plugins to other plugins, themes and whatnot. And it looks good for the first 3 to 6 months, but then something happens where you see people leaving, or you see people forcibly being let go or fired. And then eventually the brand just stops dropping off your radar more. You go to the website a couple of years later, it looks the same. And that's what we definitely didn't want. We didn't want any of that. We wanted somebody that was going to take care of it and not just shelve it and gut it and suck it dry for all the revenue they could, which happens all far too much.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like another, like beside the whole deal making, I think the one of the big fear that a lot of founders that I have also noticed, which is like that how they're going to take care of continuing your culture and taking care of the people after those mergers and acquisitions. So that's good to hear that you had a great experience with Stellar WP and LiquidWeb brands, and I just kind of like seeing them sponsoring the different WordCamps and all. And when I walked to the booth, I can see that, like, you know, the people are very friendly. I can see that reflection of the respect for the other cultures. And that's, that I think is something very prominent that I have observed just as an outsider, not being like, you know, involved in any capacity, but just observing how the team and how they present themselves during the WordCamp, it tells a lot about them.
Absolutely. There's great people here. And not saying we don't have challenges or future goals that we want to hit, but as far as the people that we have on the team and the leadership and straight down to all levels, it's we only hire the people that will fit our culture.
Great. So Devin, a couple more questions and then we'll slowly, try to bring this home.
Sounds good.
Respectful with your time as well. So the next question is, all right, so after the exit from GiveWP, you're still involved and part of a general manager in Stellar WP, and you still have a role and job. But I believe that deal made you a lot of money. Now, what did you do in regards to investing, and how did you deal with that money in regards to investing and wealth building? Is that something that also in another piece of the puzzle that doesn't matter if you have an exit or not, but when you become successful as an entrepreneur, when you have tons of cash, another thing is that Yeah, like, you know, what do you, how do you actually, what's the smart way to manage
well,
that
don't
cash?
Go to Las Vegas, first of all.
Perfect. All right.
So what I did is I immediately, I was in a townhouse before, and again, the housing market was in a bubble. And so I sold that townhouse and made pretty good additional revenue on that townhouse in San Diego, close to downtown. Mm-hmm. And then I went and I found a great deal on a house just north of downtown San Diego and purchased that right away. Rates were low. I think I got one of the lowest rates.
Yeah.
So I got locked in on a 30-year on a really great house in an awesome neighborhood that was highly undervalued at the time and still is undervalued. So this is an investment for the future.
Is it the same place where you live right now, or that's...
This is where, yeah. So I'm in the office of my house right now, and you can see I've got my own tree back there now.
Oh, I can see that. Wow.
So before I didn't have a much of a yard or anything. Mm. So now I've got a front yard, backyard, pool. I've got a great view. I've got a canyon right here, so there's no neighbor over here. Mm. And it's a 4-bedroom house. I have my own gym and everything like that. So that was really important to me, because we did shut down our office in San Diego. I do work from home. I spend so much time at home. I want to have a comfortable life at home, because this is where I am a lot of the times. So that was the first thing I did. But while doing that, I didn't just let that money sit. I knew the stock market was at a really pretty high peak. Mm-hmm. But my investment horizon is so far down the road. Like, I'm not going to retire. I knew I didn't want to retire. What am I going to do? I did make very substantial money, but by the time I'm 65, if things don't go according, like, I wanted to continue working, and I wanted, and of course that was part of my contract. That's why and my contract's been renewed, and I've continued to renew it because I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy working with the seller. So retirement was out, but so I found a high wealth net financial advisor. Mm. So he'll only work with you if you have more than $1 million to invest. And local, small company, very personal, hands-on. They do full financial planning for you, create a whole outlook based on what your risk appetite is and what they speculate the market can do. And of course, I said, you know, we're at a peak of the market. You know, we'll slowly trickle in your money, and eventually you'll be at a 90% risk rate, where they're going to be 90% ETF basket of stock, fully, you know, mostly in the US, some emerging markets, mostly in established markets and US. And fast forward to now, I think I'm now basically almost seeing a return on that, because at the time, you know, we were at such a peak, and we're almost getting back there now, but I think I'm at like 1 or 2% over. But that we're talking 2 or 3 years. I'm going to let it sit for many years. And I'm continuing to do dollar cost averaging. So every month I have a lot of cash just sitting in my coffers, just being going in. And interest rates are so high, that's making me some decent return as well. So you have to have a bit of cash, you have to have a bit in the house, you have to have a bit and a whole lot, big chunk in the market. And then I've got a great CPA as well. So we did all these different tax mechanisms to make sure that California, oh my gosh, talk about tax greedy. He worked some amazing magic where I didn't have to give up my arm and a leg just to live here in San Diego.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, it was a bit of a maze to get through, and every year is a bit of a maze to get through. But if you've got good people on your side, you can do it. And I didn't have to move to Texas or Florida. I'm from San Diego. San Diego is where my heart's at. And so I knew I didn't want to just like uproot my life to save 10% or something like that. Which a lot of people do.
yeah. So out of, let's say, real estate, cash, and then index fund, I think, you know, so those are the three that you mentioned. What about investing into other businesses, like buying other businesses? Is that something that you considered
I did put an investment in Adorim, which is run by Vito Peleg, and I helped him out, and I've got a certain bit of equity on that. which I think is a great product and is gaining some real traction. And he's a great marketer and entrepreneur himself. I hope you have him on the show because he's an awesome guy.
He is on my one of my list to invite.
Good. Incredible person. And then I also invested in my friend who's an awesome chef and started off just in tents and then moved eventually to food trucks and always was a close friend for me growing up. And he really wanted to get a brick and mortar restaurant going. And so I helped him out along with another groups of investors. And so I took a bit of ownership in that. And hey, now I get free food at a restaurant right down on the beach here where I'm at all the time. I'm playing volleyball on the beach all the time. So I can just stop in there and it's going really well. So those are the two businesses I've invested in, and I've been looking at others as well. Those are high risk investments. So
yeah,
that's just a very small part of the entire portfolio.
Mm. So any advice on investing for the entrepreneurs who that recently has an exit, like what any piece of advice that you would give, like buying a jet, maybe?
Buying a jet. I mean, if you sold it for a lot, then go for it. But that sounds like a very depleting investment. I would probably do the net jets and rent it.
Yeah, I know a couple of people here in Austin. They had a big exit. I think somewhere around $500 million exit. And he was talking about. He's like, I bought a jet and bought like 5 condos here in Austin. And 3 months later, he's like, that was a stupid decision, you know. It's like I'm selling them off.
Yeah, I was considering buying a boat, and I was like, now looking back, I was like, I'm glad I didn't buy a boat. I decided I should rent one a couple of times to see if I like it, and I haven't done it in like 6 months. But my only advice is work with somebody like a high net worth financial advisor that doesn't just work with, you know, the average net worth person. This sounds terrible to say that, but the folks that work with the higher echelon, I don't know the proper way to say it, but very exclusive groups that'll give you more hands-on attention that you need. You can call them. They'll send you updates personally. They just value you in your return. They don't want your money to go anywhere else but up within their own organization.
Yeah.
And they work every day to basically make sure that that's what they're doing for you.
Yeah. Do you mind maybe sharing those names later on so we can put in show notes if you want to?
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure you'd like that.
Yeah. So if someone who's listening and later on is like, oh, yeah, I need a good CPA or I need a good financial planner, then they can maybe, because as you already worked with them and you had a great experience, that would be great to share that as well.
Yeah.
Great. Devin, last question is there anything else that you want to mention that we didn't have a chance to talk about before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I would say the last thing would be to make sure that you can get out of your comfort zone and travel and make sure you can see the world. I think back on meeting you in India and meeting the team and actually seeing everybody work and giving that little talk in front of them and the WordCamps. And not only that, but I went to Europe twice this year. I've been traveling a whole lot. And I think travel's really shaped me and humbled me as well and made me a much wiser person. So, you know, when you're talking about peaceful growth, you know, understanding how other cultures work is very important and not just being stuck in wherever you are.
Yeah. No, that's a great piece of advice, Devin, because I've seen you traveling a lot, even going to the WordCamps that I would never even imagine myself going to. Like Udaipur, like even though I lived in India for a while, but I was still like a little bit reluctant to kind of like, you know, just travel to some places. But since 2014, I think was a year, you know, that's when I decided that I want to go travel more and learn from other culture and be more open. And I agree 100% with you that traveling, one thing in just traveling and meeting different people, going out of the comfort zone, and you know, that itself helped me learn a lot, you know, open a lot of different new possibilities. Because like WordPress, I can learn from a computer any day, anytime, you know, but like how to, like just connecting with the different people, what you mentioned about your idea of GiveWP when you were at the WordCamp San Francisco, and just that dinner table when you're having, you know, and that idea came in. And that's kind of moment that happens when you allow ourselves as an entrepreneur to get out of your desk and chair and room and just walk into nature, you know, spend more time with the more brilliant people. All of those places will enable a lot of those great ideas.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said that better. That was great. Wrap up there.
Great. Davina, so thank you so much for your time, everything that you shared, a lot of intricate details about, you know, your business, your exit from GiveWP, and a lot of great learnings and insights that you shared. I'm sure it's going to be helpful for a lot of people who are in a different stage of their entrepreneurship, and will definitely helpful as for me. I took a lot of different notes, and I'm going to keep that with me when I'm ready to sell my business in the future. Thanks once again, Devin.
Well, thank you very much. It was great being on the show. I'll be sure to tune into future episodes and share it as well. So thanks, Anil. It was very fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to Peaceful Growth. Sign up for my newsletter, Learn and Grow, on anilg.substack.com. to get more personal growth and work-life balance tips delivered to your inbox weekly. Also, check out the show notes of this episode to get access to all the resources mentioned during this interview. May the peace and growth be with you.